Morning, Your Honor. This is Alex Darcy on behalf of First Premier Capital. First Premier Capital is the largest creditor in a bankruptcy case called In Re Equipment Acquisition Resources. This matter comes before the court on an appeal from the bankruptcy court's approval of a motion to approve a settlement by which the bankruptcy court reformed a security agreement, granting a creditor, Republic Blank, a blanket lien in all of the debtor's assets when it otherwise would not have had one due to drafting mistakes in the security agreement. If the court follows its own precedent in Re Martin Grinding and Machine Works, it should reverse the order approving the settlement and remand the case. There are a couple critical facts that the court should keep in mind that make this case a little bit unique from a bankruptcy perspective. And the first is that the bankruptcy trustee abandoned the physical assets of the estate. And the reason he did that was because the debtor had engaged in at least partly in a Ponzi-like fraud scheme where they had double pledged and triple pledged, and perhaps there was phantom equipment, and perhaps equipment was sold out from underneath the creditors, such that the process of unwinding what liens attached to what equipment was going to be incredibly cumbersome and difficult without any clarity of how that would actually play out. And so, and rather than take that burden on himself, he simply abandoned the equipment, and it ended up in the state court, in the Chancery Court of Cook County, where it was sold at auction, and the proceeds are sitting in an escrow account with the liens to attach to proceeds. What's going on in this case is maneuverings between creditors to see who can get the best position in that state court case. Republic Bank would be the only creditor with a blanket lien if the court were to uphold the bankruptcy court's order. And so it's hoping that any proceeds in the state court case that are not apportioned to a particular creditor will fall to it, so it will get the lion's share of that state court escrow account. By contrast, if the funds can't be apportioned, presumably they'll be apportioned on a pro rata basis. And since First Premier Capital is the largest creditor, or at least originated the largest amount of paper in the case, it would get the largest pro rata portion of those unapportioned proceeds in the state court case. And so having that and knowing that context, I think, makes you understand why we're here and why we're fighting over this issue.
Mr. Darcy, let me ask you, in approving the settlement agreement that was reached between the bank and the trustee, the bankruptcy judge referred to a range of possible litigation outcomes, presumably contemplating litigation that would be an effort to reform the lease agreements in question, right?
That's correct.
Given that the trustee had abandoned the relevant property, I'm a little curious as to what possible litigation the bankruptcy court could have been talking about between the trustee and the bank.
Well, in the context of the security agreement, that's exactly our point. I mean, the facts were undisputed. I mean, we agree that these were Scribner's errors. So there's not going to be a hearing from our perspective and from the trustee's perspective and Republic Bank's perspective. There wasn't going to be an evidentiary hearing where somebody was going to get up there and say, hey, you know what, this was a mistake. We all agreed that it was a mistake. And we're saying under Martin Grinding, even if it's a mistake,
my question is a little bit different. I understand that there may not be factual issues. Maybe not. We'll see. But I don't understand how those are issues between the bank and the trustee rather than between your client and the bank. And you weren't a party to the settlement.
This was a settlement of an adversary claim between the trustee and the bank.
Right.
And so they had, I think, a clawback claim for preference. I think they had a fraudulent conveyance claim. I think they had a declaratory judgment claim.
Yeah, but it's kind of unusual. If Judge Caney and I had a disagreement, it would be pretty easy for us to settle it by saying Judge Cudahy ought to pay me, right?
Correct.
And that's what this looks like. Getting a third party, your client, to lose out as a result of a settlement between two parties who are resolving some other dispute.
except that our rights are affected by the settlement and we're not a party to it. So our only,
that's my point.
So our only method to do is to...
So is there any prospect for litigation over these lease agreements between the trustee and the bank because the trustee abandoned the property?
Well, remember, the bank was taking the position that because it had a blanket lien, despite the mistakes in the security agreement, that it had a blanket lien on all the avoidance causes of action. So, in other words, it was claiming that it had the claims against the casinos. There's some great salacious facts in this case. I think Sheldon Player spent his life...
We missed those in the briefing.
they blew over $1 million in Las Vegas, Your Honor. And a bunch of casinos got sued, and Republic Bank took the position that it had a lien on all those claims. And so the settlement, when you look at the settlement, basically the trustee carved out for himself all the claims that had any value in the bankruptcy court and then gave to Republic Bank all the claims that had no value, and that was explained actually in the hearing before the bankruptcy court. And then they got $600,000 from the Von Lehman litigation, Von Lehman was the auditor for the debtor, and the way that was going to work was Republic was going to continue to prosecute its case in Ohio, and then they were going to share in any recovery in that case. And then the trustee had a suit against Von Lehman, but that was just going to sit still because the trustee really can't win that suit because he has an in peri delicto problem, because his own client was feeding the auditor the wrong information, which caused the auditor to come up with the wrong audit. And so he could never really prevail on that. And that issue had been sort of partially exposed in a prior settlement agreement where the trustee had tried to settle with the auditor for the limits of the insurance policy and then get a bar order preventing all the creditors, including First Premier, from suing Von Lehman. And we had objected to that, and that objection had actually been sustained. And so this settlement is in part, anyway, an end around the original disapproval of the settlement agreement that happened earlier in the case. And so I think, going back to the facts quickly, it's our point, which you correctly identified, is that there was never going to be an evidentiary hearing. There was never going to be a dispute of fact. There was never going to be a muddle. And so there was never going to be any confusion on the factual side of this case, as there normally would be when you're handling a settlement motion in a bankruptcy adversary case. And then on the other side of the equation, which is the legal side of the equation, there's no discrepancy in the applicable law. There's no, if you look at their cases, they don't have a single case that goes their way that says you can reform a security agreement.
Well, if you're trying to say the law is not debatable and therefore this could not be approved, that's a pretty tough position. I thought your position was this isn't the trustee's business anymore because he abandoned the property in question.
Well, it's both. It's both, and in that, but with respect to that point, that it's not an arguable position. I mean, if you look at Martin Grinding, if you remember the facts in that case, in the note, the security was identified correctly, and in the UCC-1 filing, that matched what was in the note. But somehow, when they got to the security agreement, they left out two items of collateral in the security agreement. And even though when creditors looked at the UCC-1 filing, they saw what the parties, quote unquote, intended to be the proper scope of the security, the court said, no, that's incorrect. The security agreement controls. And that's been, by the way, that's been described as a double screen. So if the UCC-1 is actually narrower than the security agreement, then the UCC-1 controls. But if the UCC-1 is broader than the security agreement controls. And that's all the cases say that. There's no case that goes the other way. And then the second part of the bankruptcy court's ruling was that he said, well, I'm going to look at the composite document doctrine, which was specifically rejected in Martin Grinding because there was a written security agreement, just like there's a written security agreement here.
Could you tell us what's going on in the Cook Circuit Court and what use is being made of the bankruptcy court decision in this case?
The Republic is asserting its has filed a proof of claim and is asserting in its proof of
right.
claim that it has a blanket lien
okay.
based on the bankruptcy judge's decision.
They rely upon the bankruptcy court decision.
I believe so. I want to qualify that because I haven't. I'm told that by my colleague and I haven't read it myself, but that's what I understand. And we can get. I think we drop a footnote saying that the courts can take judicial notice, and we can provide that
we
to the
can,
court.
We can, but it's kind of hard for us. It's not terribly convenient for us to find out what's going on in the court.
Wait, no, I'm offering to send a letter to the court with the proof of claim attached.
I think that would be helpful.
So the second, or maybe the last factual part that's important here is what exactly was the scope of the bankruptcy court's order. Because if you follow the transcript, the court is saying that it's not actually ruling on the quote-unquote effectiveness of the reformation. But if you actually look at the order approves the settlement motion, and the settlement motion has a settlement agreement attached, which reforms the settlement agreement.
Reforms the lease amendments.
Right, reforms
and
the lease amendments.
Grants a perfected security interest.
Right, in the lease modification. So nowhere does the order say that the court isn't ruling on the effectiveness of the reformation, which in itself is impossible to understand. If you try to think of it in an analogy, it would be sort of like the court saying that the Cubs won the World Series last year, but we're going to leave it up to Major League Baseball to decide whether the Cubs won the World Series, but they have to read from their official rule book, official records book, which we've reformed, which says that they've won the World Series. I don't see how Judge Flynn, who happens to be the Chancery judge in this case, could reach a conclusion other than the fact that now that the agreement's been reformed, the Republic Bank has a blanket lien in the assets. And if that's the case, then it can't be that it hasn't been decided that the agreements are in fact reformed and that they don't have a blanket security interest. It must be the case. And to try to walk this fine line, I mean, both courts try to do it. I mean, the district court tries to do it as well. And it's not plausible on its face. You can't have it both ways. I think, finally, and I see I'm into my rebuttal time, but the issue here and the one that we're concerned that the court may focus on is if you reverse in this case, you're not going to get a flood of appeals of settlements and bankruptcy cases because of the fact that the facts are undisputed and the law is undisputed and because of the nature that this is affecting third-party rights outside the scope of bankruptcy. This is not going to open the floodgates. And if you decide that the standard of review is abuse of discretion, if making an error of law means anything, if it has any teeth to it, this is that case where it needs to be enforced. Because otherwise, and we've given some analogies in the briefs, you could have all sorts of settlements where the bankruptcy court runs roughshod over third-party rights. I think we gave one where in the reply brief where if you had a seaside property that didn't have ocean access, but there was a parcel of land that did have next to that property that was on the oceanfront, and that particular property owner would happen to also be a creditor of the estate. What's to stop a bankruptcy court from making that creditor convey an easement to the debtor? I mean, there's no principle of law that allows that.
It would certainly be in the debtor's best interest, right?
Right. Exactly. Of course it would be in the debtor's best interest. So there has to be something behind that stops that. And what stops that is that there's a clear error of law. And then for that reason, the court should reverse and vacate the order. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is George Apostolides. I'm here on behalf of William Brandt, not individually but solely as the plan administrator for Equipment Acquisition Resources. This court should affirm the district court's decision, which correctly affirmed the bankruptcy court approval of the settlement between my client, Mr. Brandt, and Republic Bank of Chicago. The bankruptcy court correctly approved the settlement under the standards that were set forth in this, by this court in the In Re Doctors Hospital case, and which were affirmed just in January in the In Re Holly Marine matter. The district court also affirmed correctly, and there's been no abuse of discretion by either court, so this court should affirm.
What interest did the trustee have in the property described in the lease amendments at the time of the settlement agreement?
The trustee had abandoned the equipment which was associated with the AR. But the Republic Bank was asserting in its blanket lien, in its alleged blanket lien, that it had a right to all assets of the debtor, and that included causes of action in the bankruptcy, fraudulent transfer proceedings, commercial torts. And so while the bankruptcy trustee and the estate no longer had any interest in the equipment and had abandoned that equipment, Republic Bank's blanket lien still potentially attached to assets of this estate, which is one of the reasons why.
I understand that, but I don't understand what business it was of the trustees to try to resolve anything concerning the abandoned property.
Well, the trustee going into this case had a litigation pending against Republic Bank and was interested in resolving that litigation in the most favorable way for the estate that he could. The settlement that was proposed by Republic included this language with regard to the lease reformation and the trustee's agreement that there would be a security interest.
Well, it doesn't cost you anything, right?
That's exactly right. It doesn't cost the trustee anything.
And so that's why Caney and I ought to reach a settlement between ourselves that says Cuddy, he pays, right?
Except, contrary to what Mr. Darcy has argued before you, there was no finding by Judge Squires that the lease reformation is valid or that the security agreement is valid. And the judge said
it is hereby reformed. I'm looking at the terms of the settlement agreement, paragraphs 2 and 3, which were approved by the bankruptcy court's order, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So paragraph 9 of each lease amendment is hereby reformed to effectuate the intent of EAR and Republic Bank and state as follows. That looks like an order reforming the documents, right?
Except at the time of the oral argument and the oral ruling by Judge Squires, he made it very clear that he was not making a substantive finding.
And then he signs an order that says he is.
Well,
what do we do?
The order was specifically written without to not include specific findings. All it says is that the settlement is approved and that the trustee was authorized to execute the settlement. It doesn't say that the leases are reformed and this is hereby binding on a state court. It doesn't say that there is a security interest which is hereby binding on a state court.
So are not reformed?
All we have here, Your Honor, is a contract between my client and Republic Bank. In that contract, my client agreed to a reformation. What legal effect that has is to be determined elsewhere in the state court. It wasn't determined by Judge Squires. He made that very clear in his oral ruling. He was asked
This is a contract between two parties, one of which has no interest in the outcome of these particular provisions.
That's not true. My client had an interest in the outcome of the provisions because it had an 8-count lawsuit pending against Republic Bank
So you're settling with somebody else's money, right?
No. I'm not settling with anybody else's money. We were settling with we were settling so that the estate could have access to funds from settlements of adversary proceedings against the casinos, the auditor of EAR, and others. So this is not a situation where the bankruptcy trustee's only interest is settling strictly for the reason of impacting the rights of First Premier. Not at all. The trustee had a very substantial interest in its litigation with Republic, and
I understand this is part of a bigger deal in which you do have an interest, but I'm focusing on the disputed provisions here.
Well, I think the real dispute is over whether or not there was a substantive finding by Judge Squires, because if there's no finding by Judge Squires, Martin Grinding really doesn't apply. To the extent that Mr. Darcy argues there was a substantive finding, I would take you to the transcript of the oral argument. Mr. Bobo, who was counsel for
and then I look at the order, and this does seem like is light a wave or a particle? Well, we're going to dance back and forth Is there an order, is there not an order reforming these documents?
One of the attorneys at the time of the oral ruling by Judge Squires asked if there could be reduction of what it is that he said in a written order. And he said, I'm going to let you order, you know, give some business to the court reporter and order the transcript. So it's clear from that Judge Squires meant that what he said on the record was intended to be what he meant when he approved the settlement.
Well, let me put it this way, and I'll ask the bank's counsel this as well. Would there be any problem, would there be any prejudice to you or to the bank if we were simply to strike paragraphs 2 and 3 from the settlement agreement?
I think that's a better question for the bank than it is for me. The reason that this...
Would it harm the trustee?
Would it harm the trustee?
Would you have any objection?
I haven't talked to my client about that, Your Honor. So it's hard for me to answer that on the fly here. But, again, these provisions in the settlement were requested by Republic. There's really no question or dispute about that. The trustee was willing to do it because the settlement under the doctor's hospital standard was in the best business judgment of the trustee and certainly falls within the realm of litigation possibilities, a standard that's not been articulated by First Premier really in its briefing at all. That's what Your Honors need to focus on in our view. The standard here is abuse of discretion. The abuse of discretion standard as set out by Doctors Hospital simply requires that the settlement be in the best interest of the estate, and this settlement most certainly was. The linchpin of that is a comparison between the value of the settlement with the probable costs and expenses associated with litigating, and also whether or not there would be a wasting of assets. This court has made clear that reasonable equivalence is met if a settlement is within a reasonable range of litigation possibilities.
And litigation our position is between that it certainly is. Whom?
Litigation between my client and Republic Bank.
Over the lease agreements?
Over the lease agreements in part.
What would there have been to litigate between you and the bank over the lease agreements after you had abandoned the property?
Because Republic Bank was asserting a blanket lien on all assets of EAR, which would have included litigation recoveries other than, that had nothing to do with First Premier. So
presumably Republic Bank, did they object to the abandonment?
I don't believe so.
Okay. So I don't understand what litigation there could be between you and the bank over the lease agreements.
There was pending an adversary proceeding in the bankruptcy court where my client sued Republic Bank on I think it's 8-count complaint. There were counts for fraudulent transfer. There were counts for declaratory judgment that Republic Bank did not have a blanket lien on assets of this estate. And there was a count for injunction to prevent Republic Bank from proceeding with an Ohio State court case it had brought against EAR's auditor. So at the time that the settlement was approved, there was a pending adversary proceeding in which my client sought a declaration from the bankruptcy court that Republic Bank did not have a blanket lien on EAR's assets, a blanket lien which would cover litigation recoveries in this case. And that's why this settlement is such a good settlement for the estate. That's why it's in the best interest of the estate, because by virtue of the settlement, Republic Bank was willing to carve out of whatever lien it had the litigation recoveries under Chapter 5 of the Bankruptcy Code, which were the suits against the casinos, FTI, and others, which so far have brought fairly substantial funds into the estate. And there are there are about 60 lawsuits currently pending before the bankruptcy court where the trustee and the estate are seeking fraudulent transfer recoveries against other defendants. So there was, Mr. Darcy, I don't think, was clear with you on this. There was a pending lawsuit between my client and Republic, and my client was asserting that Republic did not have a blanket lien on our assets. And that's why this settlement is between us and Republic. That's why Republic gave up and we gave up. And everybody ended up, in our view, with a good settlement for the estate, which is what the standard is. There's a question, too, Mr. Darcy has raised about the proper standard of review, whether it's de novo or abuse of discretion. It is clearly abuse of discretion in this case. Every court that's dealt with this from Doctors Hospital on back has said that bankruptcy settlements pursuant to Rule 9019 of the Bankruptcy Code are to be reviewed on an abuse of discretion standard. First Premier takes the position that somehow This was an appeal from a claim objection, and its objection to the settlement was really an objection to Republic's claim. There's no basis for that whatsoever in the record. It wasn't raised in the bankruptcy court, so it's waived. But even so, First Premier had plenty of opportunity to object to any claim that Republic Bank had filed and did not ever do so. With regard to Martin Grinding, that's a case in which the court simply ruled on the issue of whether or not a security agreement, what a security agreement covered. It did not. It was not in the context of a bankruptcy settlement. It was not in the context of a matter where the two sides agreed that there needed to be reformation. There are substantial distinguishing characteristics. I see my time is up. Can I finish my answer?
Still answering your question.
There are distinguishing characteristics between that case and here that was recognized by the bankruptcy court. It was recognized by the district court, and we hope Your Honor affirms. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Freud.
Good morning, Your Honors. Edward Freud for Republic Bank. I have only a few moments to speak, so I'll cut right to the chase. Because First Premier has chosen not to submit any documents concerning the Cook County litigation into this record, either Republic Bank's complaint, their answer, or any other documentation whatsoever, it believes it has free license to give its perspective of this pending litigation without any substantial factual basis. I strongly disagree with my colleague, Mr. Darcy's brief recitation of what's going on in the Cook County litigation. And the only thing that I totally agree with is that case deals with the rights and claims of parties to equipment which was abandoned by the estate. And when you receive Republic Bank's proof of claim from Mr. Darcy, filed in the Cook County litigation, it will not contain a copy of Judge Squire's order or the transcript or make any reference to it. Mm-hmm. Our position has been consistent, and Judge Squire's position has been consistent, that the ruling approving the settlement did not impact any party's rights to any claims, defenses, or positions which it took in the Cook County litigation. Now, we know it can't be res judicata. We know it can't be collateral estoppel. We know it can't be issue preclusion because there was no adjudication on the merits. And how First Premier can continue to argue that the settlement, which is simply a contract between Brandt and the bank, binds third parties, is a legal theory for which no case law has been cited from this jurisdiction or any other. And Judge Squires could not have made it more plain, and there is not one pleading in the Cook County litigation by Republic Bank or any other party which refers or relates to Judge Squire's ruling. Now, so why have it in there? Well, first of all, the plan administrators, Mr. Brandt's attorneys, have told you that, yes, they filed an 8-count amended adversary complaint contesting each and every portion of Republic Bank's claimed security interest in the assets of the estate. And that was settled. And it was a settlement agreement that the bankruptcy court enthusiastically approved. When I know the court has read the transcript, and Judge Squire said it's a good deal. Now, where's the money? I understand the court's a question. Are we using First Premier's money to settle the case between Brandt and Republic Bank? And the answer is absolutely not.
So let me ask you,
yes.
Is there any reason why we shouldn't issue an opinion that says paragraphs 2 and 3 of that settlement agreement are null and void?
Yeah, you know, I do, Your Honor. And we said it in our brief here, and I'll reiterate it. The contract is evidence. I mean, we believe...
Evidence of what?
Of a
evidence
mutual
that you could use in Cook County?
Of a mutual mistake of fact. When both parties concede that there is a scrivener's error, a mutual mistake of fact...
Sounds like hearsay.
Well, right? Mr. Brandt stands in the shoes... And you might be right.
No, it's hearsay if you offer this agreement as evidence in the Cook County Court, right?
I think it's an admission, although Brandt
of a non-party.
Is not of a non-party. That's correct. So that's a problem with that, and I haven't had a chance to research its admissibility, but certainly we believe that we wanted Mr. Brandt to acknowledge really the obvious. We've said it many times. I mean, even First Premier doesn't seriously in any way suggest that it was anything other than a typo. And then, so the question then is, what's the legal effect of that? And was Judge Squires to have a trial to determine the legal effect of this typo on property which was not an asset of the estate? And why couldn't that be determined by the Cook County judge? I mean, First Premier never tells you. Why can't they assert their position in the Cook County litigation?
I assume that they are. They just don't want you to be able to use the bankruptcy court's blessing.
And under what legal theory does Republic Bank claim that they are bound by a document by which they're not a party?
You agree there's no theory on which they could do that?
Yes, we did not say that the First Premier is bound by the settlement agreement which we have with Brandt. Absolutely. The bankruptcy judge said it. We didn't dispute that, and we continue to agree that First Premier is not bound. We've said in our appellee's brief they can make any argument they want. They can present anything to the bankruptcy, chancery in objection to any argument of reformation that we might make, which we haven't made. And so they're free to do what they want. That's exactly Judge Squire's point. Do what you want. Bring it to the Cook County Court. You're protected, and they are protected. There was no abuse of discretion. We're asking that you affirm the district court and the bankruptcy court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Freud. How much time? You have 1 minute, counsel.
Just quickly, to the extent that there's any dispute about what's going on in the state court litigation with respect to the record, page 8 and 9 of the plan administrator's brief lays out the facts of the state court litigation, which I represented to the court. So the fact that Mr. Brandt agrees with my characterization of the state court litigation would seem to be dispositive of that issue. Page 8 and 9 of Mr. Brandt's brief.
89?
Eight and nine. I'm sorry. Pages 8 and 9?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. Thanks.
So he says there on page 9 that there's $6.8 million in an escrow account. That's the appellee's representation. And then, Your Honor, to your point about the about striking the provision of the settlement agreement, which we wouldn't have a problem with, obviously, but to illustrate your point, the trustee could have done this settlement without reforming the security agreement. In other words, they could have granted Republic Bank a lien in certain bankruptcy assets.
Sure. Why aren't you protected sufficiently by what Mr. Freud just had to say? You're not bound, you're not bound, you're not bound. Take the issue to the Cook County.
Because we did object in the trial court, and the order doesn't reflect. The order is as it is written now, and it doesn't refer to the judge's oral ruling in any way. And so we did object. It would be, and I always confuse the terms, either res judicata or collateral estoppel would be the argument, that our argument was rejected, and the court overruled it by reforming the agreements.
You'd say you feel that perhaps you didn't preserve it then.
I would be concerned that because of the way the order doesn't reference or qualify the opinion with the judge's oral comments, that would be a concern, because the record is only the order. The order only references the motion which approves the settlement agreement, and then the settlement agreement says, as the court has pointed out, that the agreement's reformed.
However, if we affirm on the basis of representations made here, then those representations become the basis of judicial estoppel. So I just offer that as a comment. So.
Thank you very much.
All counsel, the case will be taken under advisement.